It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Internet Archive is a public digital archive of millions of books and texts, audio recordings, other materials. It's appealing a copyright lawsuit involving ebook lending. And as we examine the future of library lending in Wisconsin and elsewhere, call in with a question or comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kristen Woodward is teaching and learning team lead for user services at UW-Milwaukee Libraries, co-leader of the university's Open Textbooks and Open Educational Resources Adoption Project. Kristen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's good to be here.
Good morning. And Chris Freeland is here, Director of Library Services at the Internet Archive. Chris, welcome.
Thanks, Kate. Great to be here.
Chris, let's start with you. Rewinding to 2020, pandemic causes public libraries to close. Internet Archive expands digital lending of scanned books. Book publishers sue. And then in March of this year, a judge orders the archive to stop distributing some ebooks. How much is that ruling limiting access to the Internet Archive's collections?
Well, boy, that's a great question and a challenging one to answer. I mean, the reality is anytime you take books out of a library, it's a loss to access to information. For us at the Internet Archive, we've been doing what's known as controlled digital lending. That's the way that a library can lend a digital version of the physical book that it has in its collection. We've been doing that for more than 10 years. And in fact, hundreds of libraries around the United States are doing it as well. That same library practice. So for us, yeah, the decision is certainly a challenging one because, again, it limits access to the materials in our collection.
So in terms of what materials, like what is covered under this ruling? Because, you know, the judge says books en masse without permission. So do you see like a narrower view here?
So the lawsuit was brought by four publishers from Hachette, HarperCollins, Penguin Random House, and Wiley. And the judge's decision in March and his final orders earlier this year, said that the Internet Archive can no longer lend books from those publishers if there is a copy available for a commercially licensed ebook. And so it's a number of books. It's quite a big number of books that we're not able to lend.
Kristen, how important are freely available textbooks to UW-Milwaukee students?
Very important, Kate. We know that many of our students mirror the national trend that we've noticed over the last 15 to 20 years that students have really not been able to afford their textbooks. The inflation rate for textbooks has really driven up the cost, and students have had to make choices about trying to work through their courses without their textbooks. So bringing them free and open textbooks is an important aspect of student success for us at UW-Milwaukee.
Can you explain what are free and open textbooks? What has been cleared about them? How do they work?
Sure. Where Chris Freeland is dealing with copyright in such a big way, open textbooks are open because they have a Creative Commons license that allows users to have certain rights. It outlines the rights that users have from the beginning of production of those textbooks. So if I create a textbook that I intend to share with students and colleagues across the country, I would assign it a Creative Commons license and say this textbook was developed to be open and available to everyone. And that would allow other faculty to reuse, revise, remix, redistribute, and retain copies of that textbook or other open educational resources.
What is the savings for students? What does that yield?
Sure. If you think about the average cost of a textbook at $100, and if you think about students taking maybe four classes per semester. That right there is $400 in grocery or gas money. Mm. But on a larger scale, our project has been able to save students over $3 million in the time that we've been doing this since 2015. So right now, the average cost of textbooks is somewhere between $400 and $1,200 a year for students. So we think about what that removes from their debt burden if they're using financial aid or taking out student loans to cover the cost of their education.
UW-Milwaukee Open Textbooks and Open Educational Resources Adoption Project co-lead Kristen Woodward. We also have Chris Freeland here, who heads up library services for the Internet Archive as we look at access to digital media, with your questions and your insights along the way at 800-642-1234. Chris, this week the Internet Archive appealed the court decision. What do libraries stand to lose if you are unable to overturn the ruling?
Yeah, so when we filed the notice of appeal, we actually, you know, we indicated when the judge's decision was out in March that we would that we intended to appeal. What libraries lose really is the ability to manage their physical collections and to make those physical collections live on into the digital age. It, you know, right now, libraries, if you think of the libraries that I grew up in, I was born in 1975. I went to libraries through the 1980s and 1990s. Those libraries were chock full of books. There were books everywhere on the shelves. That is the lifeblood of what we like to think of at libraries. It's being surrounded by resources. Those books, those libraries owned all of those books. Now, what the publishers are wanting to do is move libraries away from the ownership model and move us into the licensing model, into just renting temporary access to those books. And so I think that this judge's decision is really about what is the future of our physical collections and how do libraries work in the digital age.
What is that intersection there between fair use and copyright law? There's that legal concept, I guess, of transformative fair use. And where does that intersect with copyright?
Well, I can say very clearly, I'm a recovering biologist and a librarian, not an attorney. So I can't really dive into the details of copyright law. But from a common sense perspective, people understand that if I buy something and I own something, then I can do things with the book that I own. You know, I can lend it to a friend. I can sell it either a used bookstore or sell it at a garage sale. That's just not the case when we have only licensed and temporary access to our books. I just think it's troubling to think about the future of libraries, of not being an ownership model, of not having that collected information, that collected community knowledge available to our communities, and instead just having to rent temporary access to our books.
Kristen, how does the Open Educational Resources Adoption Project, how does that help underfunded libraries maintain collections of books in digital formats?
Sure. I think that the big challenge for libraries is that we want to meet our students' needs. However, making textbooks in particular available to them is challenging. So if we think about the library as filling unmet needs for the students, textbooks change very rapidly. The editions change. If you think about the number of courses that a university like UW-Milwaukee offers, being able to purchase and make available all of those textbooks so that students could take advantage of them if they could not afford their own textbooks is really impossible budget-wise. But at the same time, as textbooks move into more of a digital model with more of a direct student sales mode, that same kind of limitation with licensing comes into play as well. So we don't have those textbooks necessarily on hand. Using open textbooks allows us to avoid some of those pitfalls, especially for information that is kind of at that first and second year level of education.
Kristen Woodward, working on UW-Milwaukee's open textbooks. Chris Freeland here heads up library services at the Internet Archive. Be part of the conversation. Call in with the question. Share your perspectives. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the landscape of digital lending and connecting library patrons with books online as the nonprofit Internet Archive appeals a copyright lawsuit over ebook lending. Looking to the digital future of libraries in Wisconsin and the nation, you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, add your thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Kristen Woodward is here, co-lead for UW-Milwaukee's Open Textbooks and Open Educational Resources Adoption Project, and Chris Freeland, Internet Archive's Director of Library Services. Chris, I'm just curious, as you examine your archives and where you go from here, where you expand, how does the Internet Archive view textbooks?
Well, that's a great question. Textbooks, as Kristen mentioned, textbooks are very challenging, especially because of the way that they are published now, where they're really electronic only. They're updated every maybe semester, every year. That the Internet Archive, with our controlled digital lending system and our environment, we were only putting books online that were had been published for 5 years outside the commercial window of print sales for books. So textbooks that we have online are more historic and are more of interest to historians of education, people who are looking at trends across time, the way that we educated our students, the way that we talked about education with our students. But we don't have those contemporary textbooks like Kristen is mentioning. And by the way, I would say I am a huge fan of me personally as a librarian as well as the Internet Archive. Open is great. Open educational resources are necessary for helping to connect students, and especially those students who are disadvantaged, who struggle to make it happen, to afford tuition in the first place. Those costs are enormous.
Let's bring on a call now. Allison in Madison is here. Allison, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I was thinking exactly about what the textbooks and the shift to digital access, and I think that's fabulous. And I'm curious in some ways about how like the back end of the industry shifted, because I remember years ago working in bookstores during textbook rush and just, without the end transaction of all that money coming in and, the actual business of doing that printing, it would be nice to think that those, that energy and funding can be shifted into like the keeping smaller print runs in print, but I don't know if it really works that way. I mean, I'm thinking also about somebody was talking earlier about keeping physical books on hand if they're not printed in big enough quantities. If things go electronic only, libraries will be empty.
Allison,
I lost my train of thought.
No, that's okay. Let's hear from Kristen to respond. Allison saying, remembering a time when the back end of textbook in the industry, it was really bustling and it was in print.
Yep, I certainly remember that habit each semester of going to purchase textbooks.
Yes, the pilgrimage. Yes,
the big heavy bag, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the important thing that open textbooks and the concept of Creative Commons license, the important thing that allows is that we can retain digital copies of the materials that we select for our classes. I think that that's, it's not the same as a physical book per se, but with some of the benefits of making the materials available digital and free, I think that one of the key concepts is that we can keep those materials. So in other words, if I find a great video online that I want to suggest for a class, I can actually download and retain that video. The Creative Commons license gives me the ability to do that. So even though it's not the same model, we're thinking about, you know, how do we maintain these resources that we would like to use in classes or as other types of learning tools.
Chris Freeland, the Creative Commons license, has that influenced at all what you can do at the Internet Archive and what you can archive?
Well, it's always great when there's a Creative Commons license applied to a piece of a digital media asset, because then it's clear then for libraries and for end users how that thing can be used or not. Mm-hmm. Or reused. So it, you know, having a clear Creative Commons license on an attribution on digital content is great. It's fantastic. It's kind of different in some ways from the issue that, you know, that Allison was bringing up. You know, when you think about the back end publishing, the heavy things in print, yeah, our library shelves are lined with those, with, you know, decades, with centuries, if you will, of that published information. And, you know, ebooks are great. They're good for accessibility. You know, I'm an older reader now. I love being able to read on my device and pump up the font size so that I can read it okay. But Kristen was getting right to the point, and Allison was as well. It's about preservation. The libraries are only renting access to, you know, to books through common providers like OverDrive. You know, individuals who are renting access to a textbook for the duration of the semester in which they're in that class. You don't hold on to those things over time. What that means is that we're not preserving that information. That traditional role of libraries in society, which is to hold on to things, to buy, to acquire them, to preserve them over time, that's being undercut by this move to a licensing and a rental model.
Internet Archive Library Services Director Chris Freeland there. We have UW-Milwaukee Open Textbooks and Open Educational Resources Adoption Project co-lead Kristen Woodward. And you can join in with your call at 800-642-1234. Shauna in Milwaukee now. Shauna, hi.
Good morning, everyone. My question for your guest this morning is, I actually do a lot of personal random research, and I use academic journals, and oftentimes the information I'm looking for is behind paywalls. And I'm curious what, if any, impact the ebooks and the experience that your guests have, what experience and how that relates to the paywalls and academic journals.
Shauna, thank you. Kristen, you first.
Sure. This is another side of the coin that libraries deal with, is the academic research in scholarly journals. Even more of our popular journals are typically behind a paywall. You probably are familiar with kind of reaching your article limit if
your
you use
threshold.
An online newspaper.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the concept with journals is called open access, and libraries work with our faculty to find ways to publish in open access journals, as well as traditional journal publishing models. We try to make open access journals discoverable in the library, just as we do with the longstanding traditional publishing model.
Hmm. As we look at this, Kristen Woodward, co-lead for UW-Milwaukee's Open Textbooks and Open Educational Resources Adoption Project. We have the Internet Archives Director of Library Services with us, Chris Freeland. And your questions and thoughts about libraries into the future in an increasingly digital age, by the way. You're welcome, 800-642-1234. Welcome to join in the program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The nonprofit Internet Archive makes millions of public domain books and texts available to people freely online. It is appealing a copyright infringement suit brought by publishers that may give us a glimpse of challenges in library lending in Wisconsin and the nation in an increasingly digital world. Call in with a question, share your perspective on libraries. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Kristen Woodward with us, co-lead of UW-Milwaukee's Open Textbooks and Open Educational Resources Adoption Project. Chris Freeland is Director of Library Services at the Internet Archive. Chris, the alternative to borrowing a book is buying that physical book, and music can be bought as CDs or vinyls. But we see music, film, TV also increasingly being streamed. Are ebook publishers looking for similar ways to rent books to readers?
Kate, I think that the idea of a Netflix for books or a Spotify for books certainly seems to be in the publisher's eyes. And while, you know, those of us who love to read, that may sound appealing, the reality is it's already here. We have our public libraries. That's the role that they serve. However, the challenge to this is that libraries don't get fair deals when it comes to paying for those licensed materials. And I have some examples here. So there's a group called Readers First that has put together a publisher price watch report. And here's an example. So imagine, let me give you a hypothetical, right? Imagine paying $100,000 to own your house or $220,000 to rent it for 2 years, and then paying that as long as you want to stay in the house. That's what libraries are going through right now. So, for example, Penguin Random House, which is one of the publishers that's suing the Internet Archive, when they sell a book, a physical book, to a library, that average price is $17.41. When they license a book to a library, it's, for that same book, it's $55.
Wow.
That's 216% increase, markup. That is not sustainable. And that, again, that book expires after 24 months. Some licensing schemes are even worse, where they expire after 26 loans. Could you imagine, like, closing your door to your house 26 times and then you can't go in your house anymore? Opening up a book 26 times, you can't lend it, you can't read it anymore. That's the kind of unfair environment in which libraries are working with this licensing model.
We heard from Tom in Milwaukee, called in wondering if UW-Milwaukee or other universities have taken advantage of a free online education source called the Khan Academy, the nonprofit offering a large variety of instruction, has some advancement offerings. Kristen, do you have insights there on Khan Academy work?
I don't have specific insights on Khan Academy, but the type of tools that Khan Academy provides are something that we look for when we're developing an open educational resource package for a course. We are aware that practice tools and tutorials can really help support student learning. And so those are the types of things that we look for in our sort of array of open textbook, open educational resource materials. And Khan Academy, I think, is one of those tools that a faculty member could sort of add in as a excellent online free practice tool to supplement what they're doing in the classroom.
Kristen, what is the view from scholarly writers who need to agree to allow students to have access to their work? How are academics persuaded to write and make textbooks available to students for free?
Sure, the textbook development model with open textbooks is different from sort of the typical model with our traditional publishers. When we think about this model, it's one where we identify the experts, the folks who can help develop the textbooks, contribute to the textbooks with their expertise. But rather than signing a contract and then waiting for a textbook to be developed and turn a profit, instead of doing that, there's a payment that takes place up front. So that payment is part of the agreement that this textbook development is going to result in an open textbook that's going to be distributed under Creative Commons. So it flips the model away from the wait for profit model, and instead turns it into more of a collaborative project where the expectation is free distribution.
That is Kristen Woodward with us from UW-Milwaukee, working on open textbooks there. Chris Freeland with us in this conversation from the Internet Archive Library Services Director as we look at the availability of ebooks and the future of libraries. You can join in along the way at 800-642-1234, calling in with a question or sharing your thoughts. Chris, in April, the New York Times reported publishers removed potentially offensive language from the ebook versions of novels by Roald Dahl, R.L. Stein, Agatha Christie. Should buyers of ebooks be concerned that what they are reading could be altered?
Absolutely. And that should terrify all of us who love reading, who love education. The idea that no longer is a book published and finished. It's this idea of anything can be changed. And that really, again, it undercuts the role of libraries in society, that role of preserving information. So, you know, you can't go back and change something that has been published and printed. You can't reach into the printed page and change that text, but you can do that infinitely and without any notice on the books that you just have licensed and that you have on your device. Terrifying.
Kristen, you know, how do libraries ensure they can provide definitive unaltered editions of books?
Oh gosh, I'm not sure that I can answer that question at this point. I think part of it is the selection process that we want to be sure that as we're making decisions about where we source our materials and the agreements that we have with the publishers, that, you know, we're using those critical thinking and evaluation skills that we bring to the collection process to make sure that we're doing a good job.
Chris, the removal of books about sexuality, about race from public and schools, from school libraries, is certainly stirring debate. How serious are these incidents of censorship compared to the potential loss of commercially licensed digital media?
These challenges are really they're awful, frankly, and to think that that people can stand in the way of getting access to information. And, you know, because some parents or a particular group doesn't want a particular book to be available in the library, that they can demand that that thing is, that that book is removed. That just strikes fear in my heart as a librarian. You know, the at the Internet Archive, we, in many cases, we're kind of the library of last resort for people. If you can get the book from your local public library, you will. If you are part of an academic community and have access to your university library, those resources are available to you. But that is not the case for many people all over the United States and all over the world. Many of them depend on a digital library like the Internet Archive, where we you know, take reader privacy very seriously, that we have these materials, we have these books, we make them available to anyone who needs to be able to read them, you know, can check the book out for a limited period of time and read the book like you need to. That's what we want as libraries. And I think that it's an important, that's why it's so important for us at the Internet Archive to curate and build a comprehensive collection that can meet the needs of a wide variety of people, because there are a lot of people around the world that depend on us for their library access.
But publishers may not see you as a library. They may say, you call yourself a library, you're not a library. What is that distinction like?
So this is a classic question that has come up and has been dispelled many times by a number of copyright scholars, library scholars. The Internet Archive and other digital libraries are libraries. I am a professional librarian. I work at the Internet Archive. There's no checkbox on your tax form that says you're a library or not. The way that you are a library is by demonstrating your librariness, by being a member of the community, participating in the norms of the practice of the profession. The Internet Archive, we participate in resource sharing programs like Interlibrary Loan. We're a member of a number of consortia, including the Boston Library Consortia. But we are part of the library system, and we are a library. And in fact, we've received funding. The Internet Archive regularly receives funding that is only available to libraries. So to that question of, is the Internet Archive or are other digital libraries, are they libraries? The answer is yes.
That is the Internet Archive's Chris Freeland, heads up library services. Kristen Woodward with us, UW-Milwaukee's Open Textbooks and Open Educational Resources Adoption Project. There's room to explore more discussion on libraries and where they're headed. Call in with a question, share your views at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Internet Archive describes itself as a nonprofit digital library offering free universal access to millions of materials. We examine how libraries here in Wisconsin and the nation will handle ebooks to strike a balance with copyright protections. Call in with a question, share what's on your mind. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kristen Woodward is here, co-lead for UW-Milwaukee's Open Textbooks and Open Educational Resources Adoption Project, and Chris Freeland, Director of Library Services at the Internet Archive. Chris, last month, several major record labels filed suit in federal court against the Internet Archive claiming copyright infringement. How do you respond to artists who see the archive as giving away their work and denying them income?
So we're doing the same thing that libraries have always done, which is acquire materials and make them available to our community. You know, the thing is, we think that artists deserve a better system than the streaming model that's happening. We're not giving away anyone's work. We're providing access to it.
Can you explain what the Great 78 Project is?
Sure. So 78 RPM records. If you're not familiar with the format, so you know, different than an LP, a 45 or a 33. This is, it runs at 78 revolutions per minute. But the thing that's really interesting about the 78s is that they are made from an organic material. They're made from beetle resin. They're made from shellac, and they are incredibly brittle. And they were published, you know, or they started being, they were produced, you know, 120 plus years ago, you know, late 1800s through the 1950s. So it's an obsolete medium. And it's in some cases, the 78 recording is the only recording of some of these songs that are available. And so the Internet Archive, in partnership with a couple of other organizations, has been acquiring and digitizing those records and making them available online for listening.
How challenging is that to work with that type of media and such brittle and sensitive media?
Yeah, they are incredibly brittle, and sometimes just handling them can destroy the object. You know, it's the same as like with wax cylinders or any of the other like early media in which sound was recorded on. It's just very, very brittle. It's very volatile. That's, and in some cases, the act of recording it is the last time that physical object can be played. So the nature of this obsolete medium and the nature of how delicate it is really strongly suggest that it should be preserved.
The record label's lawsuit, it comes on the heels of the court decision that is favorable to the book publishers. Do you expect a similar outcome with your organization removing sound recordings from its digital collections?
Well, I certainly don't have a crystal ball, so I can't look forward into what will happen through that lawsuit, but you nailed it, which is on the very same day that the judge submitted the final orders in the publishing industry lawsuit, the same law firm filed a suit against us with a different content industry and different lobbyist. It's the same playbook.
Mm. Kristen, how can open textbooks and open education resources, how can they benefit people beyond students and beyond the college campus?
Sure. Open textbooks, open educational resources are available in multiple formats, multiple places online. They're not behind any paywalls like our caller who talked about doing personal research, looking for reliable resources online, and hitting a paywall for some publications. The open textbooks and open educational resources are broadly available with internet searches, repository searches, and folks can use them to learn more about the different subjects that they're interested in. If maybe someone has taken a class years ago and then needs to brush up on, say, the math that goes with a new class, those resources are available to support them in that way as well.
Chris, what do you see happening with paywalls in the Internet Archive environment?
That's why we want to be able to own materials. That's what libraries do, right? It's that acquire, preserve, and provide access. We think that that is such an important part of society, and that's what we're really fighting for with our with the appeal and just with our work on a daily basis.
The Internet Archive is also maybe best known for the Wayback Machine. How does that service fit into your mission and the work you do with books and texts and software and so many other types of material?
Yeah, the Wayback Machine is just mind-blowing, honestly, as a user, as someone who loves culture, who loves information. So the Internet Archive, as you mentioned, is maybe best known for the Wayback Machine. So when the Internet Archive was founded by Brewster Kahle in 1996, he saw what we all experienced, those of us who remember using those early web pages. Things were, you know, it was volatile. You got a lot of those 404 page not found errors. You know, what was online one day would go missing the next. And so Brewster and his engineers figured out a way to archive and to preserve the very web that was vanishing before our eyes. And so since 1996, the Internet Archive provides this accumulated cultural heritage asset of an archived and preserved internet of the web, and makes the users can access that through the Wayback Machine. And then after setting up the Wayback Machine, the view was, So this is great. This is, however, far short of what we need, what we, the Internet Archive, can provide as a comprehensive library. Yes, we want to have the web archives, but we also want to have that information sitting alongside the books and the journals and the sound recordings that help describe the full complement of culture around us. So and what's great is that in that time since, other libraries use the Internet Archive to archive portions of the web, the portions that they are particularly interested in and that they want to have persist across their archive. So the idea, what used to be kind of revolutionary to think of archiving the web as part of a library practice, that's now just a regular part of our library practices and part of our library collections.
Makes me wonder what effect volunteerism has on your efforts.
We have a large community of volunteers and you know, individuals can sign up for a library card. You can go to archive.org and become a member of our site. You can check out books and you can share content that you have the ability to share. It's amazing the kinds of content that we have online that becomes popular. There's one set, a set of sound recordings in a collection called Attention Kmart Shoppers, where someone who was who worked at a Kmart store in the late 80s and early 90s gathered the sound recordings that would play over this over the loudspeakers, the Muzak, and ads. It's fascinating and it's wonderful, and it's great. You can listen to sort of retail versions of Christmas classics. I put it on the background a lot.
Kristen, how optimistic are you that public libraries will persist as these public repositories of knowledge, as more and more information is available only in a digital format?
You're thinking about public libraries?
Mm-hmm.
I think that our public libraries will persist because of the communities that seek out those materials that they offer. In addition to the electronic books that are available and the high demand for those, I think that our communities can also get a lot out of their libraries, different types of resources, access to internet when they need it, access to someone to talk through questions and issues. Those are all services that public libraries provide and that communities depend on. Of course, having something in the background like the Internet Archive to help with preservation is only making that community tie and commitment to information for the community stronger.
Thank you both for joining us for having this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.
Chris Freeland is Director of Library Services at the Internet Archive. Kristen Woodward, Teaching and Learning Team Lead for User Services at UW-Milwaukee Libraries, co-leader of the university's Open Textbooks and Open Educational Resources Adoption Project. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.